Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
And today we are going to be talking about the progressive overload principle. And we utilize this type of training with our athletes for a very specific reason. And as everything within our journey with ourselves as an athlete and our journey also as coaches, we over time, you know, try out different methods and see what things have the best response. And we base our decisions on the research and the evidence-based methods, but then also on what is working the best. So, Chris, why don't you explain what the progressive overload is first, and then we can kind of dive into why we have chosen that as our preferred method.
Sure, absolutely. So progressive overload is a gradual increase in stress on your body or over on your muscles over time. So in order to get the stimulus for muscle breakdown and then rebuilding, we want to continue to add, because your body's going to adapt, we continue to add increases in that type of stimulation or that stress on your muscle tissue so that we're continuing to move forward and progressing with these purposes, hypertrophy.
Yeah, and I would say when I first entered the sport, this was definitely not something that was of high value. I feel like kind of the muscle confusion, for lack of a better term, type of training style where your workout was different every day, you know, no week was ever the same. And what I found with that is, first of all, I didn't see a whole lot of growth in terms of my muscle, because for one thing, I was always looking up the different exercises. I was never really like executing properly the movement of what I was supposed to be doing. I just always felt like I was flying from one thing to the next. And I wasn't really even able to track, because I wasn't doing the same exercises week after week. I wasn't able to see like how much weight I was able to add to that exercise or anything like that. So what are your thoughts there from an athlete's perspective, and then maybe also just from a coaching perspective, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like activity in the gym, when it's not focused or it's not specific, is great for calorie burn. So a lot of times for like gym pop, we're just getting excited about activity or new workouts. Having that, you know, like consistent like super setting or trying new exercises with not a specific, like you, like bodybuilding where you're, I mean, that's what it is. You're building your body, can, you know, serve a purpose, but it's very hard to put muscle on your body, and it's very expensive to keep that lean muscle tissue. So my, you know, getting into the gym, it's important for us to be very efficient in how we're utilizing our muscles and everything from the time, the mind muscle connection, the contraction. All of that will affect the efficiency of that workout. And like I said before, how that muscle is broken down in the gym, and then how it's also balanced with the recovery period where it can build back up, will take it from, take your muscles from like that baseline down into that, you know, stress period where you're doing the workout, and then arcing back up into that super compensation. So yeah, I really like it being a specific strategy. I feel very purposeful when I get into the gym, and that also helps me know that like my focused efforts are moving towards something. It's not just kind of like a blind workout.
Yeah. And we do like a 12 week system where, you know, every 12 weeks we switch it up. And so you're going through this period of overreaching. And for most beginners, when it comes to the overload principle, the most obvious one and the easiest one to do is adding weight. And so for a newbie person in the gym, that's going to be a very easy way to create new stimulus, new growth. For the advanced weight trainers that have been doing this for a long time, you know, it's going to take a little bit more concentrated effort to get there. So I kind of want to go over some of the advantages. Like Chris said, Gen population can really benefit from the muscle confusion versus the overload principle for a couple of reasons. So one of them is boredom in the gym. And so if things are constantly changing, that can be exciting. But like she said, if we're able to do the same exercises and we're able to have that focus, then we can start to add variables and they can be controlled and scientific. So whenever I'm trying to make an adjustment for a client, I don't throw the kitchen sink at them. I make one tinker on my toggle switches of something, and whether it be nutrition, steps, cardio, weight training, we want to isolate that change so that we can see what the outcome is more clearly. If we're throwing in a bunch of different variables, like different types of sets and reps, various exercises, changing them all the time, we can't have a controlled experiment. And we're bikini nerds, right? So this is like a science experiment. We're trying to see if we change one variable, what is the outcome to that? So we talked about adding weight. We're going to kind of break this down into 10 parts. So why don't you talk about number two, Chris?
Sure. So number two is increasing reps or sets, or the volume that your muscles are under tension. I know that for me as a coach, a strategy that I've utilized recently that's worked really well is within those 12-week periodization, the first 4 weeks, I said a lot of the exercises, not all of them, but for most clients that are trying to build muscle in a improvement season, I set it to like an 8 to 10 rep range, and I have them set a baseline for their weight. So, you know, they perform those exercises for 4 weeks at an 8 to 10 rep range, and then in their second month, so their second set of 4 weeks, I have them keep that same weight but push for a 10 to 12 rep range based off of like where the rep range was the last 4 weeks. And then moving into the last 4 weeks, I have them utilize that same weight, but push for a little bit more in rep range, like a 12 to 15. And then I utilize that for 3 weeks because that's a lot of volume on your body. And again, I'll like pull out some exercises if it's too much activity. But then the last week, I try and set as a deload week where they're bringing down the weight and the sets, they're bringing down the weight. And we're utilizing more sets and reps at like a moderate volume so that they can, like that 12 to 15 range, so that they can recover. So there's a lot of manipulation you can do with reps and sets. And also, you don't even have to look at it as increasing reps for each set in an exercise. Like if you are performing a shoulder press and you're getting 40 reps in because you're doing four sets of 10, even trying to complete that set and adding two more reps in there, so and reaching for 42 total reps for that exercise is another way to measure progress and have a small incremental increase. So yeah, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I would say it's very individualized. I definitely want to say that that's one caveat to this, in that it's not going to look the same for everybody. So you know, maybe the client is working on just adding weight in that first month. And then once they've kind of hit like a ceiling there, then we always put like a range of reps. So if they find that they can't do heavier than what they're already doing, then we try to, like you said, increase the repetitions. But yeah, it's very individualized, I think, too, is one thing that really matters, is like kind of paying attention to what phase that athlete's in as well. So I may not finish a training block with a client because they've moved from the improvement season to a lean out phase. And so then we have to kind of start over with a new system of overreaching and a progressive overload, because there's different goals. You know, at that point, we're trying to just maintain muscle. We are not really able, we're not in a caloric surplus or maintenance calories where we can see these crazy gains in the gym. We're in a deficit. So, you know, it's more about burning body fat. And so that's where I'll put in like a superset, and just to keep, you know, heart rate and movement. So I guess I'm kind of skipping ahead in a way. I don't get too far ahead of myself, but, if we're moving on to method three, and that would be frequency. So how many times a week are you training, throughout the week? And then also just how many times do you hit certain body parts? So do you want to elaborate on this one at all?
No, I think that that pretty much sums it up. And I like that you mentioned that earlier about being specific about what phase the athlete is in, because I do think that's very important.
Yeah, and that also segues into what I do with method three, in terms of frequency. So if someone's in an improvement season, I may be giving them like two rest days where they're only training 5 days a week. Some athletes maybe four, depending on where their lifestyle is and how this all fits. And then, as someone's getting, you know, ready for a show, I'll give them 6 days a week. And then that just adds an extra stimulus that it's another toggle switch that I can use. And just like we would add minutes to cardio, you know, adding an extra weight training day is going to burn a lot more calories. So,
yeah, well said. Yeah.
All right. So method four, why don't you touch on that?
Sure. Exercise selection. And this is talking about what exercises you're implementing for each muscle group. And then also, talking about like, not only like equipment, but how you're hitting those body parts at different angles, whether you're isolating muscle, doing, more of like, you know, a compound movement. That's not the right word, but like, versus like an overhead press, you're hitting like anterior and mid delt, versus like doing a lateral raise or just hitting mid delt. So I think utilizing a good variety of, your muscle groups and your exercises is a great way to, kind of like not switch things up, but also kind of like challenge yourself in a different way. I'm not explaining this really well. What would you say about method four?
Yeah. So I think method four is a good way for people that get bored in the gym to still work within the confines of a progressive overload. That's the way I see it. So like, let's say your coach gives you a shoulder press. You know, if you move from a machine to dumbbells to barbells, you're still executing the same motion, but you're hitting it in a little bit different way and then hitting like a little bit different angle. So maybe, you know, on a lateral raise, you're trying a leaning lateral cable raise versus doing a lateral raise standing with dumbbells. You can actually add like a little bit of a difference too, just by doing an exercise seated versus standing. But just kind of
that's a big one.
Things up, you know, if you're getting tired of like a reverse hack squat, maybe, you do like a barbell good morning or like a sumo cable pull through, but you're still hitting that same muscle group, but it's just hitting it in a different way. And it could cause, you know, a greater stimulation, hitting that different exercise using a different machine. Because, you know, like at my gym, for example, I have three different types of leg curls that I could do. Mm-hmm. And each one of them feels a little bit different. And then I could also do leg curls on a cable standing. And that's going to, you know, give me a little bit different. Foot position is another way that you can create new stimulus, especially on multi, like a hamstring where it has three parts to it. So if your toes are in, if your toes are neutral, if your toes are out, for example, today on the leg press, I did wide, neutral, and narrow. So stuff like that, where you're, you know, you're constantly changing up the angles, and I think that that can be a good way to create new stimulus in the progressive overload, but also kind of combat any sort of boredom that you might be experiencing if you're on week 12 of a 12-week program. So.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point about machines, because sometimes like they're labeled as hitting the same muscle group, but your body position in that seat or on that bench, even like a small variability in the angle of any joint can make a huge difference. So I like that you mentioned that, because some people will try like a kickback machine, a glute kickback machine, and they're like, I only my quads are firing. And so we can play around with like your foot position, like you talked about, where they're squeezing from. And sometimes it's just a matter of like their anatomy. And so a different variation of a glute machine, all of a sudden their glutes are firing. So I think that's very valuable.
Awesome. So number five is the amount of rest between sets. And I like this one because my ectomorphs, I can use this to give them greater rest periods between like 30 to 60 seconds with my ectomorphs, those hard gainers, so that we can really push high weight and low repetition, giving them that momentary muscular fatigue to really push through the next set, especially if we're doing like a drop set or, you know, a variance or like a pyramid set, something like that, where you need sufficient recovery time and your muscle fatigue to properly do the second set with the right amount of time. Whereas the opposite of that, you know, if I have an endomorphic person, then I could just do a superset with no rest because I want them just to be increasing their movement. Or like weight loss clients, I'll do that as well. If somebody is, you know, getting ready for a competition, then, you know, sometimes I'll do like one leg and I'll just make it back to back, or I'll just make it 15 seconds of rest. But I really don't
Yeah.
think, you know, if you're powerlifting, then you're going to be resting in between sets a lot longer. I think about the ceiling for bodybuilders and hypertrophy goals is 60 seconds. I don't know where you land on that, Chris, but.
I kind of like, I think it depends on the exercise. Like, there are some, like, when I'm writing a program, there are sometimes where I'll want people to do like compound lift, like a hip thrust, and really push for like maximum exertion with like their tempo and their weight. And so I'll incorporate like a 1 to 2 minute rest because I want their next set to be super fresh. But then I'll couple that with some exercises, like you said, afterwards that are shorter rest time to help, you know, give a little bit of variety to their training volume. But also keep, like you said, the hypertrophy focus of like time under tension, having that like really fatigue that muscle group. So, yeah, I think like you said, it's really dependent on the person and like what stage they're in. But the most important thing is like I think changing one variable, like we've mentioned before. So, not increasing your weight and shortening your rest time, like do one thing.
Yeah, and so you actually snuck ahead of us on number six is time under tension. So TUT. But this can also be your tempo. So I know for myself, I've been playing around with my counts, and especially like in eccentric contractions, you know, going like 2 to 4 second counts on that and then driving up on the concentric. That's been something that's been a really. So I had been pushing tons of weight, and then when I changed up my tempo, I noticed that I had to go way back down into the lower weight ranges because it just is really fatiguing. But that time under tension is what's going to give the growth when it comes to hypertrophy. So,
Yeah,
thoughts on
that is key.
that? I know we could add pulses. I do a lot of like quarter movement rep, so like quarter at the top with lateral raises for the shoulders, quarter at the bottom with like a heavy weight on lateral raises to get those deep V's and the deltoid. I'll do because of our work with our EMG, that machine that we had, I've noticed that there's so much more glute activation in a curtsy lunge at the bottom half of the motion. That's where the glute gets fired the most. And same with the lunge. So I'll do like a lot of half depth type of repetitions and things like that. Do you have anything else that you do that is in regards to that?
Well, I really want to retest since I've totally changed the way that I train my body, because I struggled so much getting those glutes to work for that testing. So I would love to try like the curtsy, because I could not get my glutes to work on that curtsy lunge. But
I know. I wish that's a
side tangent.
That company closed, though, because of COVID. It went out of business. So
we're going to find a way.
We'll... EMG machine.
Oh, we're so sad.
Find a new one. But,
yes. Okay,
moving
but
on to nurse. Oh, go ahead. We can't see
each other.
Oh,
I was just going
to
say
guys.
Pause. It's really sad. Pauses was the only other thing I was going to add to piggyback off of the tempo and time under tension. As, like, you know, coming down, using shoulder press example again, pausing at the bottom, you know, your muscle's still under tension. So you're not coming down to a full rest, like where your muscle is not activated anymore. Mm-hmm. It's still activated for that 1 second pause. And then it's, you know, pushing on the way up. So
yeah, on the hip thrust, like holding it for 3 at the top or 10 at the top.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Number 7. So intensity, your rate of perceived exertion. So your RPE, I don't know if our listeners are familiar with that, but basically it's a 10 is just, you can't even breathe. It's the most intense possible. Where you have to recover. So for example, an all out sprint, you're giving it a 10, takes a lot more time to recover. If you're just trying to go for like a moderate intensity, you're probably going to land around a 7. Anything on that intensity?
Yeah, I think it's important to pay attention to how your body is working. Like if you're able to execute, you know, 4 sets and you feel like you could do 3 more, then there's time to make a change like we're talking about with this progressive overload to increase the intensity, make you feel like you're working hard. I think if you are reaching a point where you're getting to that last set and you're having a hard time, like grinding out those couple reps, or you have to like stop a couple reps short, to me, that's, reaching like your limit with that exercise. I've heard people refer to it as a fatigue stop. And, a lot of times for bodybuilders, what they'll do, to like offset that a little bit is they'll get to that point where they, you know, they're falling short of a couple reps of that last set, and they'll go into a drop set like we talked about. So, I think it's really important to know like where your perceived exertion is so that you know when to implement these changes or not.
Yeah. And I can tell, I mean, with cardio, it's pretty easy because if you have a watch, like you can kind of see what your heart rate is. But I know that with the Whoop, you had talked about a strain. Isn't that another way that you can kind of measure your strain when you're training with the Whoop?
Yes. Yeah, you can. It will measure your heart rate or your perceived exertion. It measures your heart rate like throughout the day too. So it'll take your like whole strain for the entire day, which I think is another thing that's important is like if you have a high stressful day, knowing that your performance in the gym is going to be affected by other variables. So yeah, that's been like a cool kind of tool to measure that.
Yeah. If you ever listen to Jeff Nifford's podcast, he has an entire series on exercise intensity, and it's like all the masterminds of the world when it comes to weight training and powerlifting and bodybuilding. And they have like hour long episodes on how to determine intensity and things like that. So you can definitely deep dive into this one when it comes to weight training. There's a lot of different thoughts. But kind of the rule of thumb that I take away from that research and things is that you want to make sure that in a hypertrophy situation, you're leaving like 2 to 3 reps in the tank, to make sure that you're utilizing the proper amount of weight and kind of like gauging it in that sense. So,
yeah,
that's kind of like one of the things that they talked about. And then on method 8, increased range of motion. So I think that this can be broken down into different parts. So one thing that I think of when I think of the increased range of motion is how much more difficult an incline curl is, because that stretch of the arms going mm-hmm. beyond your body, that increased range of motion really taxes my biceps quite a bit. But I know that, like, if you also focus on recovery work, for example, in, you know, if you have tight hip flexors, you're not going to be able to get the full range of motion on a hip thrust. Do you have any examples on that one, on the range of motion one?
Yeah, actually, so with the incline bicep curl, I know that inhibits part of the bicep. So it seems like it's really challenging in that position, especially your body position against gravity. But I have noticed even something so simple as, like, I'm going to go back to the shoulder press, like bringing the dumbbells down further and pressing up is extremely exhausting. Like, I can get less reps out of it. So, yeah. And, like, I think there's a method for, like, the half reps, like we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So just having a strategy behind, like, when it's time to do the, you know, utilize the full range of motion, which is most of the time, and then utilizing half reps towards the end to kind of, like you said, get that V with the shoulder, still mm-hmm. chasing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, on a leg curl, not everybody pulls it all the way up. They kind of, I noticed
that's a
that
good point.
I kind of slack on that sometimes, especially when I get tired. I don't go the full range and really squeeze it all the way to my rear. That one just kind of sticks out in my head. So method number 9, and I think you kind of opened it with this, is the mind muscle connection. So I don't know if you want to kind of close that one out, or if that one's just kind of as
yeah.
Is
I mean, it's yeah. I mean, it goes back to making sure you can squeeze that muscle. The biggest thing I've noticed is incorporating some single leg or single arm exercises to make sure that people are utilizing an equal sides of their body. Which I really liked how we started doing, like, staggered stance hip thrusts, because I've had so many people, and I think it's true of everybody, you have one side that's a lot weaker. And I know when I try and pose on the right and the left side, my glutes look completely different. And so, like, picking up the slack of that lagging side, has been a lot of mind muscle training, where I'm paying more attention to the slacking side and not just about, like, executing the movement, but what my muscles are doing under that tension. And then also, like, we've experimented with exercises where I was just getting, like, doing glute exercises, but getting hamstring activation or adductor activation. And I'm executing the exercises, but if it's not hitting what we're targeting, it's defeating the purpose. So, like, really paying attention to your body and not just, like, flying through your workout in the gym, I think is one of the most important things.
I'm glad you mentioned the one side dominant more so than the other, because in bodybuilding, we are very much, you know, a focus on symmetry and balance. Like, that's how we get judged. That's how we get critiqued. And when we kind of identify this, whether it's on the Fit3D scan or just by looking visually at a picture, or knowing that somebody had an injury on one side and they've overcompensated, or one side's longer than the other. So a lot of times clients don't know what to do to make it even. And I always tell them to identify the side that's the weakest, have that dictate how many reps are in the tank. So that needs to pick the weight. So, for example, my right leg is weaker than my left. So I always start one-legged exercises with my right leg. It's very, very easy for my left side, but I have to be patient, because you don't want to try to do more weight on one side or the other to get a balance. You need to make sure that you're catching up the weaker side. So even if it's easy, like, for me, one-leg hamstring curls are impossible on my right, and then it's so easy on my left. But over time, if you continually have that, you know, isolate one side or the other so that the dominant side isn't powering through and you allow that other side to catch up, you will become balanced over time. So
that's really well said. Yeah, I think that's very important because everybody is going to have some type of imbalance, but knowing how to address it is that's great. Yeah, especially with the symmetry of bodybuilding.
Yeah, and then the last one, and this one I just recently, my training partner and I had a personal trainer work with us last week and the week before, and it's so crazy how sore I was after that session. And it wasn't anything new. I wasn't doing like these crazy movements that I hadn't done, but just having someone slow you down, watching you, because there's a lot of movements you can't see. So just different ways, like with reverse hypers, with like deadlifts and shoulder work and things like that. Yeah. He just really helped me kind of come back to that, you know, proper technique. And sometimes that can just be a good way to mix it up and to give yourself a little bit more of a challenge. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, actually, working with my boyfriend has been really helpful. He's like so like excited about this stuff. So like form and correct movement is like a big part of how he coaches, and it's been really good to get feedback because you're right. There's exercises where like, especially now with dealing with some issues with my neck, like I can't turn my head to look in the mirror and see if that muscle is firing. Like I need to concentrate on keeping my spine in a neutral position. And so like having that feedback or sometimes just being able to like push my shoulders down or touch my back where my shoulder blades should be helps. Again, like that mind-muscle connection and get the form of my rib cage in a good position so that I can execute stuff that's going on with my limbs. So really, like even the position of your core, the bracing of your core, your glutes, the position of your pelvis and is all important to executing the movement, preventing injury, and really being able to load that muscle group as efficiently as possible. I know some people will use video, and times where I've worked out by myself, I'll record myself just so I can see what's happening. And I'll know, okay, I need to really like work on this position. So the mirrors are great, but I think you hit it on the head. Like sometimes having that extra set of eyes is really helpful.
Yeah. And so hopefully we've been able to shed some light on ways that you can progressively overload without getting bored in the gym, and just also, you know, creating those gains and making sure that hypertrophy every week you are progressing. And these are just a couple of the ways that you can do that. So if you found this helpful, we would love, love, love it if you could give us a rating or review. It just really helps other people find the podcast that have interest in the prep life. So be sure to subscribe so that you're clued in on when the next episode is released. And you can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. And you can apply for the team at glamgirlbikini.com. Just hit the Get Started button and you can apply there. So this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.